bouldering area with my kids the other day, and somebody came hiking through with a Bluetooth speaker. Of course, because that's what hikers, do, right? They gotta have your tunes. But first time ever, it was a good song. It was
good.
The Gambler.
Really?
Do you know The Gambler?
Yeah.
You gotta know when to hold 'em. Yeah, Kenny Rogers.
Know when to fold 'em.
That's right.
Know when to walk away.
Know when to run.
When architecture kicks here. Your ass.
Oh man, I thought I'd set this episode up with the answer to
answers.
One of the answers.
What ails
to
you?
The question that I'm going to ask you. So, yeah.
Are you going to
sing it? The question is, Cormac, I'm not going to sing it to you. But this is a great old...
Yeah.
Just hit my microphone. This is my old Martin 0017. This is like a 1938 guitar. It's really,
really
old.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
My super cool. Daughter, she went on this path, I don't know, about a year or so ago. Her brother... went thrifting and found her actually full size Casio keyboard.
And
she's never played, you know, before in her life.
Do you remember that episode of Friends where Ross had the little Casio keyboard?
Yes.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh man, how many Casios in our lives have we had, and how much joy has that company brought? I mean, it's just incredible.
So
what did she do with it? Did she
she's taught herself how to play, and it's amazing. Because
females are incredible.
What's people. Amazing about Jeez. It is that our bedroom is basically slightly or right over hers. And, mm-hmm. You'll hear her playing Beatles, Imperial Death
March. Which you don't like. What do you do when she plays the... Do you pound on the floor?
Stop that infernal racket!
Yeah. You're going to go to hell. I'm sure that's what the parents said to
everyone.
Here's
the thing, too. She's like, I don't really know how to read music. So she basically writes everything. She's got, all of the letters out on the keyboards.
Yeah.
And she writes it all out in the letters of the key. And that's how she taught herself how to play. And it's sounds good. I'm like, and so.
You say that? You sound so surprised.
Well, I mean, for somebody who.
Well, you are. On some
I am. I mean, but for somebody who has never played before, to basically just teach herself how to play.
Right.
And so yesterday she that's went cool. down to the basement and. There's the kind of the stack of her brother's guitars. And she's like, you know what? I'm taking this one upstairs. I'm going to learn to play the guitar. Absolutely sure you'll be able to play the guitar.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, I think that there's never been a better time to learn how to play an instrument than there is now, because
True.
There is just instruction everywhere, right?
Well, it goes back to... the one time that we were on stage at the Builders Convention in San...
What was it called? Construct?
Construct, thank you.
I think. Yeah.
And someone had asked you, what is one of the best tools out there for architecture?
Productivity tools.
Productivity tools.
Productivity tools. Yeah, yeah.
And what did you say?
I said YouTube.
And
this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Right? This was when there was, YouTube was literally not allowed on the network in our office.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's when that comment was made.
And so where has she learned how to play the piano? Where has she learned, is going to apparently learn how to play the guitar? YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, it's just
because it's a free option.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. All right. Well, I have a question for you. What is the last thing that you did, kind of creeping over my microphone here, what's the last thing that you did where you seriously lost track of time? And this could go in a good way, or it could go in a bad way. let's stick with the good way.
I think in a way there's both. So we'll keep it positive.
Yeah, we'll keep it positive.
You know, one of the...
Let's start there. Yeah. Let's start there at least.
I will honestly say, because you kind of precursored this a little bit, so I had been thinking about it.
Good, good.
And
I thought I'd get a better answer if I did, so that's why.
and it's that creation moment, whether it's the early stages, and I was specifically thinking architecturally, and I was specifically thinking mm-hmm. about the birth of an idea in concept, where you immerse yourself just blindly in the production of an idea that, you know, that somebody gave you. And I'll give you a good example. So I, you know, we've talked about the Hopkins project that I've got in Baltimore and how, mm-hmm. you know, we're working on, you know, several different tenant fit outs. And one of them, I don't know if this is guarded secret or, but one of them is a wellness clinic. And it's not your, like, the average what pops into your head wellness clinic. It's a lot more, and there's a lot more science behind the specific spaces that they're asking for. And I have never done any of this. Never done it before. In fact, you know, some of these spaces I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
And about a day and a half later, I'm feeling like, you know, and it was just immerse myself in research, immerse myself in understanding the space, immerse myself in understanding what it is they're asking me to do. And, you know, that's the gift that I think architects have, is trying to immerse themselves in the understanding of how, you know, what the space is, how the space is going to be used, how they're particularly going to be using those spaces. And, you know, I just leaped in. And, you know, like the research portion of it, the, you know, trying to look at each of these individual spaces, you know, down to the minutia of like, you know, okay, if this is a single occupant space and I need accessibility around a particular piece of equipment within that space, and I have to, you know, start thinking about that. But then I've seen their existing spaces, and they're completely different from kind of like the analytical approach to, you know, the way that I'm looking at each of these spaces, and I just get buried into it. And then like a day and a half later, I'm like, oh, this is like,
it's Thursday.
Yeah. It was just like, wait, and honestly, when we started working on this, and you know, I'm not alone. I mean, there's, you know, a team, and the team, you know, immersed themselves in this as well. But it's, everybody was just kind of like, you know, just dove into this to try to really understand some of the spaces. So, but it was just like, we sort of forgot time for a little while.
I like how you framed it as the act of creation, because there's the analytical side of it, right? Which you mentioned toward the end there, where it's like you're diving deep into, maybe there's code implications, maybe there's occupancies, there's fire, there's exiting, there are those things.
Oh, yeah,
and I mean, you kind of have to take it all in, and but it's all under the framework of, we don't know how to do this. We haven't done this before, right. In exactly this way. I mean, everybody knows this who's in architecture. It's not a math problem. It's not
right.
Like, this is not a tame problem, another way to say it. Like, there's tame problems and wicked problems. Mm-hmm. And wicked problems have no clear path
right.
on how you're going to get to the final result. And architecture is a wicked problem. Like, these projects, you have no, for the most part, you have no clue how you're going to get from here to there. You don't even know where there is.
Right.
And so but you're comfortable in that place. And that, I think, is what is a very successful outcome of what going to architecture school is about.
Yeah.
It's about problem solving. It's not about knowing the problem mm-hmm. and then solving it, but it is like figuring it out as you go.
Right, right.
Obviously, there's all kinds of things that push up against that. Like, how much time do you actually get to spend to do that? What are your skills? How much resources do you have at your fingertips? There's a lot of things.
What other projects are you working on? What other deadlines
What other responsibilities in your life do you have?
How many meetings do you have that could have been an email?
Right. So I think, you know, framing it as the act of creation is a great way to do it. And then just kind of this insatiable curiosity to figure something out. I mean, it is kind of interesting that, you know, we call ourselves licensed or registered architects, but we're really licensed or registered problem solvers, right, or at least we're up for the challenge. We may or may not be successful, like solving kind of implies success, but it's not always successful, right? And through failure, you learn as well, right? And that's part of the process. And I just think it's very interesting. And the reason I bring that up is that like licensed or registered problem solvers, or, you know, we're willing to take on any challenges, because we really are literally willing to take on any challenge. The solution does not need to be a building.
Right.
We're just wired in a certain way where we're curious and interested to figure something out. And what is crazy is how much information is available nowadays to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You actually don't need to have a mentor or somebody sitting right next to you who has done it before anymore. Like you brought up the example of your daughter learning to play the keyboard, right?
Sure.
It's like you can go out and find that information, and it's really accessible. And that's the democratization of these tools. And it's gotten rid of many gatekeepers who have existed in the past, where people having that knowledge, architects included, was like a very exclusive thing. And now we're seeing less and less of that. All right, those walls are getting torn down as we speak in many different ways.
Right. Right.
So I was thinking back to about this question before I even asked you about it, and I thought, what were the things? And I mean, there's so many variations of this that I can think back to. Like there's just pure distraction as well, where you just completely lose track of time, right? You could be on YouTube, you could be scrolling on Instagram, it could be something where it's just like, whoa, where did the hour go or the 20 minutes go? Yeah. I had no idea. But you really did kind of take the question how I meant it, which was like, where did you get so deep into something that you absolutely lost track of your surroundings, like your sense of time? What I mean by that is just like, where did you go? What rabbit hole did you fall down? And I was thinking back to various ways I could answer that question through different things. And oftentimes it comes through learning or making. And so you talked about it as the act of creation. And I think this is right in line with that, because I think about building models when I was in school.
Yeah.
Literally building models or sitting at the drafting table and drawing. And you're not drawing because you know what you're drawing. You're drawing to figure out what you're going to draw, you know, and you're building a model to figure out your project. You're not building a final thing. You're building a study model, which is a tool that you're using to help you get from here to there.
Right.
And I think that's another interesting thing about the act of creation, is a lot of times we have to build a tool to make a thing, or we have to do 5 studies to figure out which direction we're going to go. And I find that to be really satisfying. And I look back on these losing track of time situations very positively, even though there are other people in the world who will look at those and say, that's a complete waste of time. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And because everything is figured out. What do you mean you have to figure it out? Like, it's already figured out. You just have to draw up the blueprints, right? When somebody comes and just wants you to draw up the blueprints, it's like, that's not even, that's not how I think, right?
No.
So I think about like even early computing, I think about like learning how to write code. How do you write a web page? How do you write HTML? And it was like, it was endless. It was an endless pursuit when I was learning how to do that. I mean, and that could be said for basically any area of study, right? It could be architecture, it could be biology, it could be physics, it could be nutrition, it could be anything. And there's an endless amount of information that you could consume, but you kind of align your passion and your curiosity with this thing. And that's, to me, where we get in the zone or flow state, where you actually lose track of time. And design is one of those places. And that's the architectural one on my list. It's just designing a project. It's you have a certain amount of time to design a project. You are penalized for spending, quote unquote, too much time designing a project.
Yeah.
And that is an endless black hole you could go out, go down, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will say that there was another, in my opinion, easier way to answer that question. And it's something that I know for absolute certain you have experienced this, is any and all automotive endeavor, mostly, hey, I'm going to, change my brakes and rotors. How long could that possibly take? It's just like, how many times have I done this before? Why is this bolt not coming off?
Right. It's just, how am I going to apply the right amount of leverage to get this bolt off?
Exactly.
It becomes solving a problem, right?
Yeah.
It becomes this thing where there's a lot of curse words and you're trying to figure it out, and you're not just trying to do the job, you're trying to figure out how to do the job.
So here's something interesting, and I don't know where this is going other than on a tangent, but was working with my son, showing him how to change brakes. Really, it was just brake pads at the time, not rotors or anything like that. And we were trying to, get some leverage on one of the bolts. Wasn't working. So I went and I was looking around. I was looking at the ratchet that I had in my hand.
You're looking around just like in the scrap pile.
No,
right?
I looked around.
Kind of what you do.
So I looked over and I saw the handle, the removable handle for my floor jack. And
I've used that to slip over a wrench.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what I ended up doing was, at first I looked at the crimped end and I'm like, well, I could grab a screwdriver, jam it in there and basically tap it to open it up. I'm like, no, wait. And I just basically cut the end of the plastic handle off, perfect round size, slid over the handle perfectly on the ratchet, and there was my leverage. And my son looked at me and was just like, how did you know to do that? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it was something that was, I knew I needed leverage. I knew I needed to find something to provide that leverage. And this was it. And the only way for it to work
you blew his mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was just like, I wouldn't have even thought of that. And it's just like, I wouldn't have even thought of it either until I did it. And I did it and boom.
Yeah. Yeah. A floor jack handle is a great thing to have around. This is the reason why we don't throw things away, right?
No.
You never know when you're going to need them. This is why the garage is full of crap, because you might need it someday.
Well, absolutely. There's
that's a great example. I love that example. I've used open end, or not the open end, the closed end of like a box wrench.
Oh, yeah.
To do the same thing. You kind of slip that over something, and it may not be a straight lever. It's still a lever.
It looks like this.
Yes.
You just push it down. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it still works.
Especially when you get into those little awkward spaces in the wheel well or something like that. You don't have the space for, the floor jack handle. You need that box end, right? The closed end. It just like that one, honestly, is the time suck of all time sucks, is working on your vehicles, because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know how long it's going to take. You, of course, already know that
you're not an expert.
When you're looking for your 10 millimeter suck, you're not going to find it. Like everything,
it's in the cross member under the radiator.
Everything labeled 10 millimeters is for some reason not there.
It's gone.
And you can't, it's not the next size up. It's not the next size down. It is exactly 10 millimeters.
Isn't that a 7/16? the reason I had this instrument out is this is where this has been a huge time suck for me over the years.
Yeah,
just sitting and playing guitar or bass for a very long time. And there was a time in my life where I thought that's what I was going to do, right? It was just, I thought I was going to be a musician, and that's, I was going to play music and write music and record music and play music and sell music and put a lot of hours into that. And it was something that I still look back on as like one of the coolest things I've ever done, like making music, playing in front of people, two people, having fans, hearing it on the radio, those kinds of things. It was just like still something that I'm extremely proud of. Like I texted you the other day, I was like listening to the my band's album as I was driving, and I don't do that very often, but when I do, I'm just like, damn.
Well,
this was fun. That was good.
You know that we're fans. My daughter absolutely loves your
the Phelan household.
And
some of them.
And you had posted a photograph of a sunrise, and you had used the title of one of the songs from the band. Right. And of course, everybody's like, ooh, beautiful picture. Ooh, beautiful this. I knew exactly. I was like, I know. Yeah. I know that song. And then, of course, immediately, what did I do? And played that song.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And over nice. And over. And then we had, my daughter and I had a conversation about that song. And she was like, you know, I wasn't really sure what I actually thought about that song because of the way it, you know, kind of like starts a little slow. But she goes, you know what? It's actually become one of my favorite songs.
I would love to know why. I feel the same way, but I feel like they're all my children, right? So that's one different thing between obviously me and somebody else who's coming at it from a different perspective. And I like them all for very different reasons, right? It's just like actually having kids. It's like they're very different from each other, and the songs are very different from each other, and I like them for different reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I even started, like, you had to have known I was listening because I started, like, shooting you off questions, just like he joined the army in June. What, you know, what June, what year, what this? And you were like, what?
I'm like, it's a metaphor.
It's like, metaphor. Oh man, I was connecting because I joined the army in June.
I see. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that I just feel like it would be fun to talk about. And today now, what are the things that you lose track of time over? Let's keep it positive here because I don't want the answer to be email, right?
Well, honestly, what do I lose track of time over currently? It's the start of Formula One season, man. New season of
new episodes are out. It is of the latest drama.
Well, of Netflix's Drive to Survive, their little episodic recap of the previous season and all of the drama there. And so it was one of those. It's just like, can you
what do they call that now? Where you just splurge and watch all the episodes? Are they releasing them?
They released them all at one time, and of course, you know, binged them. And I was just like
binge.
And I was looking at the time, and I'm like, okay, I need to sleep, but I also want to watch. You know, like I got to know what.
Just one more. Like,
But the next episode's about Lewis Hamilton. They're going to...
You got to know about
that. I got to know. So, you know.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that's interesting. It's just like, it is easy for anyone to really just kind of like fall into that rabbit hole of binging. You know, just as like, you know, and then the next thing you know, you're just like, all right, I done. Like, Silo, I didn't watch Silo when it first came out, so all of the episodes were released.
I still haven't gotten into that one, but I know it's good.
It is very good. And I just like burned right through. And the thing that I found so amazingly enjoyable about it is not only just the, you know, the storyline of the sci-fi part of it, but also the architectural side, you know, the setting. This very
in the Silo.
Oh yeah. Because it was you can tell that it was a Portman-esque building, or at least inspired by, because I got the vibes of the like the Renaissance Center in downtown Detroit. You know, that's what it felt like, that the set of that, and so I was more captivated. It's equally captivated. Let's just say equally captivated by the architecture of the set, as much as I was with the storyline, which the storyline was great. It's an interesting concept, But and I'm not going to give it away, so you need to go and watch it someday right. so that we could chat about it.
I guess I will. Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you and I tend to tell each other, oh, you need to watch this, or oh, you need to watch that. And every time we do that, there's always some form of visual impact, architectural impact that is part is as much of the storytelling as anything else, like Tales from the Loop. I don't know if you've watched that or not.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I just
recently rewatched amazing. It, you know, because, you know, it's, you've got this kind of like, you know, mid-century modern vibe. You've got this, you know, futurist vibe. You've got all of these things that are equally as part of the story as the story. And
yeah,
without the entourage of the architecture, I don't know if the story would have the same kind of impact.
Severance has kind of a vibe similar to that,
yeah,
right? Where it's kind of dreary and kind of liminal spaces. And I mean, it is interesting how much the architecture as a character in some of these, right? Where the place that they're in is another part of the story. Mm-hmm. It plays a character. It plays a role.
Yeah.
I think that is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. Because the stale kind of like office setting of Severance, and as the disconnect from like reality, from your daily life, and then you go to your daily life and it's got a completely different vibe, a completely different feel, completely different architecture. Not sure, you know.
Well,
go ahead. Sorry.
My flow state thing recently, I think, has just been riding my bike. I mean, I am super fortunate to, and one of the reasons we decided to move here, that was like one of my must-haves on my list, was mountain bike trails. Mm-hmm. And the trails here are just incredible. And I've had the opportunity, even through the winter, I mean, it's just been a really mild winter up to this point. We're supposed to start getting snow basically today. But it's been, they've done a bunch of trail work lately too, and it's just been insanely good, where these trails are like something that you would normally, if you went to an actual ski resort during the summertime that they ran mountain bikes on, they're that quality, where it's like you would spend $80 to go ride these and they're just free. They're just right down the street. And it's just been one of those things where you get into a state, and I mean, all I can do is describe it as flow state. And the flow state is like where you completely are in control and out of control, and it's totally fine at the same time, right? It's like I'm literally going, you know, 25 miles an hour down a very steep, rocky, rooty, dirt, loose, you know, trail. And it's perfect. It is perfection.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of people would hear that, and they would just hear that and be like, no way, there's no way. And for me, it's like, I want to go faster, right? And things are bouncing around and back and forth and forwards and backwards and slipping and underneath you. But there's like a certain level of disconnection with the bike. It's like, you're not locked to it, mm-hmm. right? It's just this dance between me and the bike and the trail. And It is literally the flow state. You do lose track of time. And I think what's so interesting about it to me is that it is like a meditation, which is you are so focused on what's actually happening. And I think this is what happens in the creation state as well. You are so focused and your brain is working so hard. Like when it's over, you are exhausted. Mm-hmm. Right, you are just completely exhausted.
I've
had podcast episodes like that. I've had episodes like that with you, like after the conversation it's like I need to go lay down, like it's just like my brain is done for the day, like I'm cooked. Right, and I look back at what was just accomplished or whatever, you know, and it's just like, wow, that was really cool. And I think that is such an interesting outcome of something that is so challenging and so difficult. And really great conversations can do that to people. A really great ride on a bike can do that. A real, like watching a really great movie, listening to a really great piece of music, right? And there's different ways to connect to these things. And it's that connection, I think, that draws me to this question, right? It's like, what, how do you get into that flow state more often is like what I want to know, right?
Right.
And I know there's a lot of research and there's a lot of books about this. And also, like, not everybody's wired the same. And so not only are they not going to get into a flow state doing the same things, but they might look at somebody else's thing and be like, that's terrible. Why would anybody do that?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So I think it's really interesting how personal that is as well.
But I think that's what connects you, is that's what charges each person differently. You know, I mean,
right.
Whereas, you know, I could definitely say, you know, hey kids, let's go and do this. And they're like, boring, don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife and I are like, man, this is the greatest thing. I mean, I don't know how.
Simple pleasures.
Yeah. Don't know how or why, but, you know, I mean, we get a kick out of, like, going, it's going to sound lame, I guess, but, you know, antique. And mm-hmm. we don't really ever go there for
the thrill of the find.
Well,
the,
it's not even.
It's like treasure hunting.
It's treasure hunting, but. To me, I sit back and we'll go through these places and you know, there's a bunch of different
states. You do sound old, I will say.
There's
you
a bunch of different old, states of mind when I'm walking through there. Some of them are like, and I think you'll remember when I was like just sending you photograph after photograph after photograph of the Star Wars toys, saying, ooh, I had
right.
this. Ooh,
I was already thinking yeah. that, like, no, but the antiques I'm looking for are cool. That's what.
Yeah. And so I was just like, ooh, I had this. Ooh, I had that. And, you know, and so there's like the connection between what they're selling and, you know, my own shared memories of those toys. And then there's others where, you know, you'll see like maybe, you know, some Victorian photographs or like these old postcards that people have written. And you wonder, I wonder about the story behind them. You know, here's a photograph of somebody that there's no name on the photograph. There's no inscription on the back or anything like that. Who was this person? What was their story?
Right.
And you know, why was their story mm-hmm. lost through time? And then you look at the stuff and you look at, it's like, wow, humans collect so much stuff that this is how it ends up. Like we go through this time of life that we collect things that we enjoy. You know, it's like I showed you this one time, but I mean, like, you know, I've got 1,001 collections of field notes.
Oh yeah. You know, we got to do that episode.
We do, but jeez. I mean,
Cormac showing off his collection of field
but
notes.
But it's like,
tell us in the comments if you want to see that episode.
Yeah, please do. Cause I will completely nerd out on my field notes. But I mean, it's just like, yeah. What's going to happen when I move on to either the unused collection or the used collection that, you know, I just use to remember things, to jot down thoughts and ideas. Hey, let's sketch out a ceiling detail or something like that. And, you know, so mm-hmm. I'll have all of these notebooks of thoughts and ideas that will go into the ether. So you walk through there and I'm always wondering, or I apply my own story to the things that I see. It's like, you know, sure. Oh, you know, it could be that like somebody decided to set up a living room as their display for, you know, their set. And it may be like these pieces came from a bunch of different people, but I'm picturing one family and this is their dining room or this is their living room. And, you know, what is the story behind that? You know, to me, I think the history or the shared history that I look at and see, you know, it's just like, oh, that person was a freak, you know, those kind of like all sorts of things. It just, it's like, it's so enjoyable to think about the history of humans through just.
And that's a huge time suck, right?
Oh my
like when
gosh,
you're wandering
yes.
those stores full of stuff.
That
right?
is a huge time suck. I mean. You know,
you're basically prospecting at that point, right?
You're picking
oh, yeah, through yeah. the smallest details.
Sometimes when, you know,
and it's also overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much stuff. It's like, I can't even focus because there's too much stuff.
Exactly. I mean, we'll take my daughter. Will you know, come in with us? Like, no. Like, all right, we'll just be a couple of minutes. She's like, mm-hmm, sure. She knows. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be 2 hours.
And then you got the SpongeBob 6 hours later.
Exactly. Exactly. But the whole time I'm like, you know, sending her, not a big fan of clowns. And I always take these like, you know, really creepy pictures up, you know.
Because there's always.
You know, those like, you know, clowns. 1960s, 1950s, like clown dolls and stuff. They don't look like jolly happy clowns. They're always
Fun clowns. No.
And so of course, you know, I have to take that like really artsy portrait mode shot that looks, you know, that I kind of like shine a light on to make sure it looks really extra creepy and then send it to my daughter. She's like, yep, no thanks.
Nice.
Like, you sure you don't want me to get this for you?
Yeah, she'll definitely want to go with you next time, I'm sure, because of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny that there's like these just moments that you can have, and you're not setting out to do that. You're not setting out to lose track of time, but at the same time, there's a high likelihood that that's going to happen because you've done it before, right? And I think you know, bringing it back to where you even began, where you were talking about her learning to play the keyboard. What I think is so interesting about getting into a flow state is like, and just the attacking a challenge or doing problem solving or whatever, however you want to frame it, you don't even have to be qualified to do it.
Right.
Right. I think that is a super interesting thing about it. And not only that, but you don't even have to be qualified to do it and be successful at doing it.
Right.
Like, obviously, we're talking about a huge range of possibility here, but it doesn't stop you. I mean, and I think that's what's so cool, because there's a lot of people who have self-doubt and imposter syndrome, and they can't do something because it's like, I can't, and there's these excuses, and I won't, and I can't, and I didn't, and I should have, and I could have, and I would have, but I didn't. And it's like, I think that's what makes, and I'm not really saying this like to put us on a pedestal, but that's what makes us, and us is like the people wired like this, different. Mm-hmm. The people who are interested in challenges and who have that motivation, that intrinsic motivation. You don't, because I think rarely it's externally motivated or, right? It's not extrinsic motivation typically. Right, it's like to get into that flow state, it's like, and like, there's some people who can do that, right? Because they've shown up for 10 years writing or drawing or painting or whatever, so that when the time comes and somebody commissions them to do a thing, they can actually just do it and get into that flow state at will. But to get there, you have to find it from within. You have to intrinsically motivate yourself like to get into that place. And I think that takes really good habits, and you have to figure out yourself so that you can get yourself into that state. And I always see that with my youngest. It's like, he'll make some excuse of why he couldn't do something or why he did it incorrectly or whatever. And I'm like, okay, now you know that about yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Now you know that about yourself. So what are you going to do about that? Because you just turned 18 and like, you're responsible, right? So next time, now what did you learn from that? And I think that applies whoever you are. It's like, if you're interested in getting into the flow state, for example, and finding something that you could lose track of time in doing, what can you do to remove the barriers that you have to get into that place?
One of the things that I tell my sons, as you know, two young adults, I tell my daughter this as well, but I think she seems to be more suited to saying, yeah, I understand.
Go ahead and say it.
Well, it's
no, say it. Just say it. She's way smarter than
she's them. Way smart. Yeah. Not saying she's my favorite, you know, but you know, whatever. But you know, I talk to them about the fear that they have of failing when they do something
keeps them back from doing something.
Keeps them back from doing things, and you know, you try to explain to them that. You know, I've said this before, and I absolutely love this one little thing, you know, this little cartoon that my dad had sitting on top of his computer. It was like, the only job that you start from the top is well digging. And, you know, I was always telling them that, you know, the point of that is that you're never, if you've never done something before, and I talk about this a lot with our new architects, our emerging professionals, that if I ask you to do something and you don't know how to do it, and I don't take the time to teach you how to do it, you're going to, you know, if you go away and you try it and you try it and you try it and you try it, you know, you'll either stumble on, yes, success or failure. And I'm going somewhere with this a little bit later. Hopefully I'll be able to bring it home. But, you know,
I'll buckle my seatbelt.
You know, I tell my sons, I'm like, it's okay to fail. You have to accept and make peace with that. Failure is a part of learning. And in fact, you know, we've talked about that failure has helped me grow more as an architect than my successes. Because I've tried things, and in fact, I just recently, you know, visited an old project of mine, and I loved the process. We've talked about, you know, some of these projects, like the Annapolis Elementary School is what I just recently visited. And I look at it, and there are some really amateurish, dumb things that I did design-wise that, you know, I tried. It was okay. It wasn't the greatest, but it was things that I tried. And I wasn't afraid to not try them. And then today we were looking for some example photographs to put into a presentation. And I was looking at, and I always open up our server, our asset server, where we've got all of our photographs of all of the different projects, you know, whether they're construction photos or professional photography. And I was looking at this one detail. And I took a screenshot of it and sent it to the guy that I was working with on this presentation. And I was just like, you know, this detail goes unheralded. So like, this is actually, honestly, one of my most, I won't say perfect details, but it was damn good. It was like...
It was unheralded.
And it was unheralded. And I was like, I tried. And I failed miserably at a bunch of different types of this. And I just kept trying. And I just tried to refine it, keep getting better, keep doing it over and over again, building habits to learn about how, you know, the material goes together until I got to a point where I'm actually like, oh, wow, I actually know what I'm doing. And this actually turned out great. And I tried to tell that to both, you know, our new interns and my sons that, you know, it's like, try it. You may fail. You may fail miserably, but try
permission to fail, sir.
Yeah, but try it. Build a habit. You know, build a habit of continuing to try, to be inquisitive, to keep pushing your own uncomfortableness. And you'll get to either a state where you're like, you know, it's this flow state where it becomes something that you just lose yourself in. You lose yourself in the time. You just enjoy the process of discovery and making. And now, like, you know, honestly, that particular detail, that my unheralded detail that I was talking about, opened up a facet of thinking for me of like really getting into the minutiae of the details, but understanding the constructability aspect to be able to deliver really good, kind of like really pristine, kind of like, dang, somebody really thought this through kind of details. And I can say that, you know, what, 25 years plus into the career where, you know, I just, you know, tried and failed and tried and, you know, got better. And I may say fail, you know, and it was a successful project, you know, it doesn't leak, you know, those kind of things, but it wasn't what I was hoping for.
It was of the time. And your level of experience.
It was of the time, it was of the experience. But what it did was it forced me to keep learning, to keep hungering for that discovery. And that, I think, is where I can get into my flow state, is, you know, that always hunger for discovery, for, you know, that detail, that, you know, the design, the, you know, like I always talk about it, the continuous line, how that line kind of like carries through things, and what does that do, and all of that other thing. And so, you know, when I talk to my boys, I'm always telling them, it's like, you know, you may not, it's like, you may have this interest and you have absolutely no skill in that interest, but you have that interest. That's the nugget of desire to start kind of like building the hunger
to seek. I think you reminded me of one of my favorite quotes by Steve Jobs, and it's so simple. I think it started with him, but I could be wrong. Internet can fact check me on this one and let me know. But it's very simple. Stay hungry, stay foolish.
Yeah.
And the stay foolish part is really applicable to what you're saying, right? Because like there's this hunger to progress and to challenge and to do and to try. And the foolish part is interesting, right? Because it does imply you're doing it wrong, or you could do it wrong. You could fail. And you could be trying to do it a different way than somebody has ever done before, and therefore you're doing it wrong. And I think when I think about your boys who don't want to try something because they might fail, is that failure is such a heavy, heavy word, right? Yeah. It's so heavy for them to think that the possible outcome of trying the thing that I might be interested in trying, I don't even know yet, is failure. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of those old movies where it's like, it's going to go on your permanent record, right? In elementary school.
Yeah.
Like, this is going on your permanent record. And it's like, nobody cares, right? Nobody cares. And the whole idea of failure is, there's this weird perception that we have as individuals that is that everybody's looking at me, when the fact is everybody's actually just looking at themselves. Yeah. They don't care about you. And we can't shake that.
Right. Right.
We can't shake it. We always feel like imposters. And guess what? Everybody feels like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. There's this thing we can't shake, which is that everybody's watching me all the time. And it's because you're watching you all the time and you're putting that on them. And it's not true. It's not how it works.
Right.
And that's a hard lesson to learn. And I know we all struggle. I struggle with that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I don't want to fail either. But at the same time, that fear of failure keeps you from even trying something or from starting something.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not a good place to be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it stifles people's growth. It stifles people's desire to learn more, because they're like, well, you know, what if I fail? What are people going to think? Honestly, most of the time, if you know, people are being honest with themselves, they're like, at least they tried, you know, at least they tried. But we could.
That's more than what most people
would do. Exactly. But we can never convince ourselves that trying is as much of success as actually being successful at something, right? You know, you can never be successful at something if you never try it. But if you try it, you're one step closer to success than you were 5 minutes ago before you tried that thing.
I'm probably one of the only 49-year-olds at the climbing gym. You know, like, I go to the climbing gym, it's a bunch of kids. Yeah. It's a bunch of kids and college age kids. You know, they're still kids, right?
Yeah.
And nobody says anything to me about my age ever. And I don't know if they even think about it, right? But I notice it because I'm the one who's the outlier on the scale in the gym. And it's like, it is exactly what you just said. It is just, I cannot climb as well as they can. Like, they can do incredible stuff with their bodies. Like, they're so strong. These kids are incredibly strong. I'm not that strong, but I can do pretty good stuff. I can climb pretty hard climbs. Yeah. And it's just because I go and try and I try hard. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, I do feel good about that. But I'm doing it because I want to stay mobile. Like, I want to still be able to do this stuff in my old age. And I think there was this one talk that I listened to that was really impactful, and it was by Sam Harris, and he's got a fantastic podcast and a meditation app. But something that he has a lecture recorded. I'll see if I can find it for the show notes. But it's called The Last Time. You never know when the last time that you're going to do something is. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Right.
And it's like, when's the last time you went skiing? And it's like, I didn't know the last time I went skiing was the last time I was ever going to go skiing. Like, you just don't know when that's going to be. And I think that's really interesting, right? It's like, and we live our lives looking at the things we want to do or could do, but don't for one reason or another. Sure. And you'll never even have a first time, right? Because there's so many things you filter out and you say, that's not possible. I can't do that. I won't do that. You totally could. I guess there are no rules. Like, that's another Steve Jobsism.
Yeah.
It's like when you realize that the world is made out of people no smarter than you are.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're in pretty good shape, right?
I mean, luck, opportunity, perseverance. You know, when you're like, okay, mm-hmm. but look at them. They're a billionaire. It's just like, are they that much smarter than you? Are they, they just perseverance, kept trying, tried something.
Played the game.
You know, played the game. But I mean, it was like, you know, they had this notion of, you know what? No one's ever done that. Let me try it. And yeah. They're like, ooh, look, he tried it. It didn't exist. Now it does. And
this is the whole, like, they stole my idea fallacy,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They did that thing. That was my idea. It's like, the idea is the easy part, yeah. man. do the thing.
Exactly.
Don't just talk about the thing.
Exactly.
Don't just have the idea in your own brain and keep it there and maybe write it down in your field notes, right? Yeah. And store it on a shelf. It's like, no, do the thing.
That felt
go
personal.
Out and actually do it. Yeah, that was pretty. That's the hard part, and that's what you're looking at. That's what you're seeing when you look at that billionaire, right? It's like they actually did the thing.
They did the thing
that you just talked about. Yeah, yeah. All this fits together. Anyway, that was fun.
It was.
That was a good conversation. Yeah. All right,
but, you know,
you can prompt me with something.
Don't
next time.
Like you know, besmirch the field notes.
I don't have field notes, but I have a field book right here. I have a knockoff field notes. Maybe you can send me a case, an extra case of field notes.
No, I don't share.
I knew it.
You know, everyone's going to ask, ooh, I'll buy that. You know who would like that? Evan would like that. Evan ain't ever getting it.
I'll buy that. Evan would like that. I'll buy that.
I'll buy that for Evan. And then Evan never gets it because of like, yeah, I don't know. That's really cool. I like
yeah.
it.
It's the same reason you never got your coffee from Kurt and yeah. Jamie. Oh, you did end
I
up
did
getting
end up
it,
getting it because of the guilt that I continuously yeah. kept applying to him.
That's a reference to our shared episode with the Coffee Sketch Architect podcast guys who said they were going to send us coffee because their podcast is about coffee and sketching.
Yeah.
And they just never sent it until they finally did.
Well, so. I mean, you've enjoyed a good steaming cup of the Coffee Sketch podcast coffee brand, right? No?
No.
Oh, yeah,
I never
that's
got any.
Right, because they failed you.
They failed me.
Kurt, if you're listening,
yeah.
you failed Evan.
I'm hurt. Kurt, I'm hurt.